restaurant won an award this year from the mayor for its contribution to the arts in St. Louis, and we're really proud of it. They won the award for housing the poetry series for the past 5 years, and of course, we've had the poetry series here for the past 7 years, so we, two of the years didn't win an award, but it's okay. And there is a poster on the wall on the stairs that was given to Duff's. And we also, the mayor shook Karen's hand, and Karen's behind the bar tonight. So we're an award-winning poetry series, and Duff's is an award-winning restaurant. We're very proud of that. The second thing is that our mailing list is quite antiquated. And, in fact, we have people on the mailing list that we know have not lived in St. Louis for 5 years. So, if you are not on the mailing list or if you've moved in the past year, would you please put your name and address on one of the little yellow cards that Lisa has at the door? And then we will remind you of the next readings, and you'll get information about the poets and things that are happening in literature and poetry and that we've heard of in St. Louis. So please do that. Let's see, what else do I have to tell you? Oh, Kathy Mohan was going to play violin tonight with Peter Clemens, who plays guitar, but an unfortunate thing for us, but a wonderful thing for her happened. She had her baby this morning. So she's not going to come. She's a little early. She wasn't supposed to have it for a couple of weeks. I also wanted to introduce Peter Carlos, who was last year's Duff's director, and he's been unending support to me, and I really appreciate him coming tonight and being as good as he is. And I want everybody to give him a round of applause. Let's see, what else? Anyway, that's enough for now. I'll tell you the rest of the little news later. The first poet who's going to read tonight is Pamela White Haddis, and she's the author of Marianne Moore, Poet of Affection, Designing Women, and In Light of Genesis, and she has a new book of poems which is called Beside Herself, and it'll be published later, well, in 1983. And I guess she read last year, and we're really pleased to have her reading this year, and I don't know what else to say, but here she is.
I want to dedicate this reading tonight to the memory of Arthur Brown. Most of my acquaintance with his poetry was from hearing him read here, and it was always an inspiration. I'm going to start with the Ballad of Baseball Annie, which I read in honor of what the Cardinals are doing tonight. This poem started with a lecture that I heard at the Breadloaf Writers Conference by Ron Powers on baseball annies. Those are the groupies that follow baseball teams around. And I had never heard of these people. And he talked to me later about various baseball annies and what they'd done. And one of them tried to invite Eddie Waitkus down to her hotel room in 1949, and did not behave well. And so this is the Ballad of Baseball Annie. Don't ask me why a passion starts or how. Just let me say it clobbered me 2 years ago when I first saw Swat play. The way he swaggers to the box and waggles in his stance. The way he strokes the sweet horse hide, he makes the diamond dance. I hang around the stadium. I hang around the bars. It's full blown now, but can he see? I am all eyes, all ears. Annie Burns is the name I give. It is my baseball name. And this diamond life is a life apart and everything but tame. It's not like where you type all day and never score a point. It's home is not all up in the air. Either you're safe or you ain't. The faded field, the devil's pitch, the globe, its spin, the sun. It's here we get a glimpse of God's. I'm not the only one I know, but of all us cockeyed gals glued to the diamond tilt, I am the only one I know who feels this thunderbolt as SWAT whams the apple over the fence or at any move he makes. He shifts his feet, my belly rise, all twisted up with snakes. A diamond is a girl's best friend. Ha ha, I told you so. We were engaged at Wrigley Field. You are the last to know how I was the pole behind your whack, my hand the one inside your mitt, my keen eyes on your balls. Good luck, my love. Godspeed. Some lover you to ditch the cubs and me your secret Annie. My room, my heart still cluttered up with you. Why don't you die? I make the meaning of my life that night at the Edgewater Beach. I send that note, you answer it. At the door, I'm about to reach for my paring knife, but you slip past, I reach my gun. You say, I'm a silly honey to think of this. You're such a decent guy. Point blank, it's done, and I kneel down and hold your hand, your eyes. I mess my hem in your spill of blood, safe on your sacrifice. I'm finally in on your headline, SWAT, closer than any wife. That's just why I got that hotel room. That's why I brought the knife. The bullet was for me, I swear, according to my plan. First I'd scuttle you, then blast myself. We'd die as one. I missed your heart by just an inch. How lucky. Just enough to make a miracle, beyond just plain garden stuff. I wasn't safe to you, filled me up like God fills up a saint. The game's much like, you're in or out, either you're safe or you ain't. My diamond life may be fouled away, but my split-skinned heart's still fair. Who doesn't know that Annie Burns, when this cursed play is over, will rise right up from Kankakee and start all over again with hits and catches catch can and breaks for home as some light-fingered man or anything to bring me back to all my fans out there who love to watch me win or lose, my heart completely bare in court the way it was that day and in the paper. Too. This is America, it's love and war and hullabaloo. It's bang-bang plays, split-second affairs, putting a spin on the globe. It's tenderness and violence, all that jazz and sob. My story, I go over it again and again like a game, a comedy of errors, all mine, but I won't accept no shame. For she's a jolly good fellow who can say to passion, die. A diamond is a girl's best friend that nobody can deny. Now I would like to read you a rather long poem that's a kind of short story in epistolary blank verse. I happened to do a lot of reading one year about 19th century women invalids, or sort of professional invalids, and I read a book about Lydia E. Pinkham and her vegetable compound and the kinds of women that appealed to. And I made up this kind of story where two women are writing to Lydia E. Pinkham to ask for medical advice, and the last letter is a testimonial written after the woman has taken Lydia E. Pinkham's. One of the women, the first one, is a rich lady who is one of these coddled invalids, and the second woman is her maid. So they're in the same house drinking Lydia E. Pinkham's vegetable compound for different reasons. One of them wants to get pregnant, and one of them wants an abortion. The compound was advertised so that you could think that it worked for either one. This poem has an epigraph from Elizabeth Barrett Browning. I am always dying, and it makes no difference. This is from 10 West 14th Street, New York City, 1st of April, 1897, to Mrs. Lydia E. Pinkham, Lydia E. Pinkham Medicine Company, Lynn, Massachusetts. Dear Mrs. Pinkham, I hesitate to take my pen in hand or waste your time with this, but I'd like the woman's ear that hundreds have confided in, if one can trust the papers. I do not find the ads for Lydia E. Pinkham's vegetable compound obscene and titillating, as my husband does. My maid seems healthy, and the cook tells me Dorcas drinks her Pinkhams every day. The cook won't touch it because of the alcohol. My husband's friend, young Dr. Thorstein Fallis, treats me and blames my naughty ovaries for all, the fits and faints, the weeping laughter. Ever since my honeymoon, 5 years, I've suffered cravings, backache, nausea, suppression of the turns. Would you agree it's from the ovaries, those sweet pink hearts? And that's not all. He says my womb's inspired caprice and artfulness, and so I'm told the solitary vice. I have been warned insanity is but a step from this. It may be crazy to sing to your ovaries, still I do, as I don't have a child. Till now I fear I have been too content as an invalid, achieving neither cure nor death. I move in neurasthenic circles, descanting symptoms to pass the time of day. I've tried warm baths and cold baths, no spicy food. I've tried electrical, mesmeric fads, everything from plugs to pessaries. But what I really want to ask, I fear, is something I can't mention to my friends. It's when my doctor starts his medical manipulations, testing for those known unnatural responses that imply derangement of the female organs. When he strokes here, then there, inserting his newfangled, slowly sliding speculum, I jerk and weep. Aha, says he, don't be afraid. I am an expert with the knife. The operation is quite simple, dear. It's called female castration. Is it what you call belly ripping, or is the doctor right, that it will help my moral sense and save me from gluttony and just plain cussedness? I feel a pressure on the little cup of my collarbone, and my heart begins to beat in every organ, every fingertip, when Thorstein Fallis treads my stair and knocks. The walls tilt in, and the objects in my room begin to leer. Ebony looms and ormolu clock, woolwork portraits, gas jet polished grates, accuse, accuse, creep closer, sneer like nurses. It is not ladylike to be in love. I hope I'm not, but when that doctor comes, whose hands have been beneath my petticoats, I must tear my hair, contort my limbs, and howl. Once I bit dear Thorstein's hand, it bled, but he's bled me. When the curse it pleased the Lord to grant a woman ceased in me, that man stuck his leeches to those lips. They sucked down there until I swooned. It didn't help. Malingering is one expensive hobby, as Charles would have it, who used to love my pallor, so spiritual, so beautiful. But now he wants a son. He wants a wife who meets her marital appointment more than seldom. I've seen his eyes go straying toward my maid. Why are the females of the lower classes so healthy? Take Dorcas now. She's just 18, of course, the type they call a buxom lass, straight from the country, milk-fed, brash. At first I didn't think she had a nerve in her body, but the New York pace may have infected even her. Else why is she using Pinkhams every day? I've wondered if she might not be in love. The vulgar blushes, the silly songs she hums or whistles thoughtlessly all day. I think robust vitality is crude somehow. Dorcas sometimes sulks, but only till Charles comes home. Oh, then she is on top of the world and saying how very good I look, don't I? At times I am perturbed by this. I dream she's coupling in my bed and with my husband. Winking from the dark skylight, I feel my fingers chill, and chill creeps up my arms, and when it hits my heart, I start to laugh, and then I sink away. It seems my arousal is my fall. Forgive me, dear Mrs. Pinkham, for running on. It does relieve my mind, so long as no one knows. A baby in every bottle is what you claim? Could you be clear just how this works? With what I have told you, can you recommend a course of treatment, or is my case past hope? Looking to your answer, I remain your supplicant, Tryphena Twitchell Rush. West 14th Street, April 1st, 1897. Dear Lydia E. Pinkham, I haven't got no friends to turn to. I just come to town not but 4 months since. My father passed away from his heart, my mother from her womb. We was always poor. Now I have trouble with both my heart and womb. The place I got is with this fancy doctor. His wife is sickly. Doctors come here like fruit flies around a rotten peach. I don't think it does no good to ask a doctor. She ain't better. I hope I haven't caught what ails the missus from the windows always being closed in there and complaining. I overheard the doctor say novels is a cause of uterine decay, and with the Castle of Otranto right there, and I've been reading it to her a week now. Could that cause congestion of the ovaries? The returns have stopped in me for nearly on 3 months now from almost when I come to this place. So I want to ask, will your tonic that dissolves and throws out tumors and brings on the monthly flow restore me? I've been using it a month or so, and so far I'm the same. And maybe you could give an opinion on my mistress. She is one of those high-strung types, real pale, and even sipping tea seems to fatigue her. But, oh, she's beautiful as some fairy princess, golden hair and hands the light goes trembling through. But then she faints. She never goes too far from something soft to fall on. The other day, she flipped and flopped herself around like a hooked fish and screamed what I didn't write. And then the doctor said, we'll have to shave her head. And so she stopped. Then he whispered to the master, fear is a sedative. I wonder. I toss all night till the bed is all of a topsy-turvydom, and after those nights I can't keep down no food. It's dreams. In one I saw a female organ blown up like a balloon and rising right into the sky, and the doctor comes with one of them pointed poles for picking up stray trash and stabs it, and gray worms rain down on me. It's been 3 months since all of this began. I'd ask the master, seeing how he is a doctor, but I don't know if I should say this part. I am afraid of him since almost the first night that I was here and he came to my room asking for pity and I was helpless. Well, that is enough. A poor girl just can't ask that class of man. What I only have to know is, does your tonic clean out the womb eventually and soon? Should I use the sanitive wash and syringe? Do you think I will go smiling through? I anxiously await your answer. I remain your humble servant, Dorcas Flowers. Ten West 14th Street, New York City, 4th of July, 1897. Dear Mrs. Pinkham, here am I again. So here's my testimonial. I've heard that every woman who's dissatisfied with her lot is sick. Well, they just haven't tried to liquidate that lot with Mrs. Pinkham's vegetable compound. And thank you for the little book. I used to hate descriptions of anatomy. I blush to mention even a table's leg. Now I'm full as a Chinese toy shop with my daily dose. I dare my Charles to peek at Teeny Feeny, my pet name, and I don't care when he storms out to his club, and I don't mind that Dorcas is blowing up under her apron since she took a good deal of your stuff, and I need only wait and meanwhile lull myself. Sometimes I think that Charles has married Dorcas. Sometimes I think perhaps she has my child inside her, or I'm their child. Charles wants to know, oh, why, am I singing softly in the closet behind the row of boots? Well, that is where I keep you, Mrs. Pinkham, cases. The dark gets full of swirling colors. They take shape in a fine belay of oozing cells. I tell myself these are the true, untried ovarian forms of thought, the nerves and air ramified by my relationship to my mother's milk. I haven't given up my life of symptomania. Where is the poet of pathology? Oh, yes, Mrs. Browning, healthy compared to me. Nor animal economy, the commotions of my tender tubings, oval agents, woe manifold, nor infinite fallopian, oh, my. Oh, you, in your black silk and white fichu, they say you are a table wrapper and a quack, those doctors. Pooh, with their heroic gulping, purges, blisters, laudable pus. So I am a riddle, terra incognita, as far as Charles is concerned, queen of the clumsy tangle, a house within a house, an engine within an engine. La, it takes just 3 bottles a day to keep me going. I used to be afraid of the chloral faces in window curtains. I'd whimper down the dark keyhole cave. Now each day, Pinkham's lark, that's what I call the wing-like sweep across my brain when I'm behind the boots, brings me to my mission, to be happy with my lot. I sit and concentrate on moon and tides, my mind's Pandora's box, hope the only evil left in it. It's Independence Day and Dorcas cares for me. Let's all be free with love and all things out of our control. I'll take as much of the doctor's nostrum as Dorcas measures out. More than one life is in the willing hands I will to her. Mrs. Pinkham, I am so happily sorry for the length of this. I might have been a writer, but a woman must write with blood, and I'm too weak to spare blood, even with your tonic in my veins. With blessings on you, Mrs. Pinkham, I remain myself, Tryphena Twitchell Rush. Now for relief, a little short one. This is a sonnet. It's called Marilyn Monroe. I barely learn my part. As to the whole, I'm in the dark. Excuse my dishabille, spread thin as light. I'm really almost real, available for sale. When I took the veil of Hollywood, of nil and la-di-da, glittered and phosphored, hocus-pocused, glossed with platinum tremblings, breathless, raw, I promised nothing so much as promise, crossed and double-crossed my heart, that free-for-none where ghosts hang on my every absence, frame my presence, mouth my yummy name and grin. To be a legend, sweetheart, the cream of dreams, sleepless, to do the whole scene over and over, be taken in, exposed. You get the picture. Now, I'm sure you all heard about Mrs. Harris who killed the Scarsdale diet doctor. I have two epigraphs for this poem. The first one is from Mrs. Harris's lawyer, Joel Arnoux. Would you please tell the jury what you meant on March 10 when you said, I was a person and no one ever knew? The second epigraph comes from Jean Harris herself. I was a person sitting in an empty chair. One, the madness. At Madeira, they learn to be tasteful, ladylike, to save their bodies, conceal them, let them be, to act as if there were something there and not there. Ideally, I should have been single, a widow, spinster, divorcee. Now all seem apt to me, though mistress was apter for 14 years. The afternoon I left my position at the school, I spent putting my will in order, kissing my dogs goodbye, test firing on the terrace. I planned to do it by his pond where daffodils would ease the shock. I drove 5 hours with flowers and ammunition. I called him from the stairs. I had the gun, the flowers, the best intent in the world to have our last words be most kind. Then I found her green-blue satin negligee in my bathroom. I flung it on the floor. He didn't follow my script. I heard the glass shatter as the curlers hit the window. He hit me. I went and smashed the mirror. Again, he hit me. I turned the same sore cheek again. He turned away. I put the gun to my head. He grabbed. His hand was shot. I stood and stared. I got the gun. He lunged, and I fell back. I felt a muzzle hard pressed to my stomach. We were closer than love. I squeezed the trigger and felt no pain, but he was on the floor. I clipped the gun against my head, then fired through air. Again, it clicked against my head, empty, broken. I helped him back to bed and left him, fled, came back, and he was dead. The letter. I never should have mailed my shriek of pain. I had to expel those girls. It was a mess. To think of him with that adulteress, that psychotic slut of his, insane he is. There's something I cannot explain. I was a snob. You'd think that his mistress would not be tawdry, coarse. How could he kiss us interchangeably? She put a stain on my nightgown, bright orange. My yellow dress I found balled up, smeared with feces. Yes, human shit. And he could live with this. He wanted fun and games and happiness, and my distress was tactless to excess, perhaps, but I am not a murderess. The logic. If murder is misdirected suicide and theft is inverse gift, you take from her to whom you'd promised love or payment were you not unequal, then I'm satisfied to say I killed myself in him where pride had fallen first, to say he robbed my store of dignity, but he was the bestower in prizing it. Believe me, I'd have died. All I wanted was to be beside him, noticed, cherished, intrinsic, sanctified, not by God, but society, allied. I am a woman, always qualified by hemstitch and hormone, now a homicide, but not by reason. By reason, a suicide. The spirit. The evidence is laid before you here, my madness, my letter, my logic, the scrutiny of the body, every bloody particular, positions and displacements. Now this body, this gathering of awe and doubt, of peers and words, there are too many words. Nobody seems to notice I am not here in tears at all. The woman in a pretty dress is nowhere. Headmistress and mistress though I've acted, I'm not here and never was. Trim as any wife in Scarsdale, I kept my body. I rewrote his damn book so it wouldn't sound so cheap. To be somebody with somebody. What it took from me means nothing but suggests a way of being alone. See, I was just somebody in a pretty dress of opinions in a play I wrote, but no one followed. Can you see? Of course I know this trial's about a body. Mine wasn't there, the only one was his. Beside it, just a woman in a pretty dress, a pretty fix, a headmistress strayed, a lady, 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 lady. I am a person in an empty chair. Let this body convict me. I was there in spirit, and even that will disappear before my sentence ends, before I care. Now for some more lightness. I wrote a poem called Woman with Quasar, which was inspired by a physics colloquium that I went to at Washington University, where Margaret Burbridge spoke about quasars. And I couldn't understand much of the physics that she was talking about. But I was tremendously impressed by her her love of what she was talking about and her enthusiasm about quasars. And I went and read a whole lot about quasars. I won't read you the more serious parts of the poem, but I put together a poem of all kinds of, I guess it's a kind of love poem about a woman with a quasar. This part is called In Her Slanting Dicular Position. She is not crouched like a snail cuckoo in the trunk of the Palomar telescope, slaunch-wise her aura exceptionally blue for nothing. Oh, no, but for the asking. She has got her camera to color by number, has got her finger pressed to the pressing pulse, has got some graphs in a rat's nest of chance, and in her pink, she has got more than anyone, pulling off red shift after shift after shift, biting into the apple with the unresolved core, tasting ultraviolet excesses, putting a tail on the whole sky lit up by her wish for her asking to one with one, and selling the big picture. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the Q-ish Kino going thing, as good as all get out in A-double-one, Raro, Flash, and Foxy from way back, passing in the dark your dazzling dogs, for sure she's monstrous fine, as scrum and yet plum of a heaven's high-toned spiff, bright as a devil's cufflinks, bang up in royal flush, honey, humdinger, alakazam, and very hot stuff, so step right up for dream ducks and rose meows, too precious for words, from the bee's knees to the mosquito's eyebrows and oysters, ice skates to snakes, toenails, a woman with a quasar is one brilliant cat's pajamas of a catch who sleeps with her, sleeps where no star falls. I have a poem about Miss America. It's advice from a mother, a former Miss America, to her daughter who is maybe thinking of becoming Miss America. So this is just a little lesson. It's called She Walks, She Talks. It sounds so easy. Mother, may I? Step, hop, jump? No, you may not. Glide this way in baby steps, as queens must do, in swimsuit as well as evening gown. See how I walk on air, twinkle by, disguise the fact that the human gait is a chain of interrupted falls. Meanwhile, learn to breathe. It must come from your gut. When you're sure you're alone, go, and pant, snort like a horse. That's it. And then you catch yourself up on your toes, brush knee over knee to smooth the uncouth bounce, eliminate all space between your thighs, and presto, you're a mermaid on a unicycle. Be sure to think of bubbles, diamonds, Tinkerbell, and poodle puppies. Your eyes must be the exclamation points on every utterance. Your lips slide like electric doors over your well-greased teeth. And train that heft of voice on fairy tales out loud as if to a child. Inject the expectant swag and savvy you do not necessarily feel. And whether you're mincing with feet or words, be familiar with forest spirits, wry amphibians with powers, and a king's hand to give. Then amid gleams and silver linings, ogres killed and thrilling, be up in the air with an orphan's wink, with beauty waking as if you care to come across a happy ever after. Impress your life on your judges. Tell them Daniel Boone and Pocahontas hang in your family tree. I said that I watered my prize-winning 4-H turnips with vodka and grape pop, that I began to be pretty when I began reciting the Lord's Prayer backwards in the tub, that the x-rays showed a perfect tooth in my left ovary, that I raised snakes to practice motherhood. Anything you say is true enough, and they'll begin to see her in you, scintillating fragments bundled in infinitely pedestrian versatility. The secret is, you do not have to be born to be Miss America. In the duties of our identity, there is only she. No me, no you. And I would like to finish with a poem called The Call. It's a telephone call. You know, I just had this nutty thing. I just had to call up somebody. I just sort of needed to sing to somebody, you see, all my life. I know this sounds really nutty, but I've loved to sing all my life. It might have been a profession, you know. Anyway, I've used it being a minister's wife and all. And I had to sing for every cat hanging and this and that. Well, then I was never anything great in singing all the time. I got laryngitis as a sort of permanent condition. But just let me sing you this. I know it's kind of strange over the telephone, but I get this feeling, though. You'll understand. Wait, here it is. By the waters of Babylon there we sat down and wept when we remembered thee, O Zion. Could you hear that all right? I wasn't standing too close. My daughter, she left for school tonight, and all of a sudden, it's so quiet and all in the house. I sang as a kid on street corners, I did, and all over the scales. Brother, have you got a dime sort of thing in a crooning kind of voice? And my brother, Tuck, got so he could sing in the Muni Opera and like that. It was my form of communication, see? And who knows if I hadn't have had to go and sing for absolutely every cat hanging, like I said, and got this thing in my throat. You know, when things don't go just all the smoothest. Remember The Buried Life that Matthew Arnold wrote? The thousand nothings of the day, when you are in a strange land, and then too, being a minister's wife like I am, how do you do your own thing, or do you get through an alien life? He just likes sports, and that's about it. Oh, I don't know. You see, my husband's brother and my husband with him, they always liked to get up and go someplace. Back then it was the Depression, and I was kind of shy, very shy. And 16 years old, going to football games, then you know, he didn't really want me really, but his uncle liked me, and then he, my husband, didn't have any interest in the ministry, playing pool and bowling, and this and that. So he decided to go into the church finally, I'm afraid, because he was interested. And then so then, maybe he'd write his sermons just before he stepped into his pulpit. We're Methodists, and I didn't say anything, but I'd sit there on edge every Sunday, see for him, religion and all. That was like sitting in an ice cream counter and you don't like the ice cream, so you pretend, and it doesn't hurt you. Oh, sometimes I'd like to just slip into a Catholic church by myself and have myself just a naked intent toward God. That's in the cloud of unknowing. Do you know it? But our whole life is absorbed in games, the TV loud, and maybe three times a week one couldn't have friends come over since we'd all have to be talking football, or else he'd get right up and leave. So when she left for school tonight, I just had to sing to somebody. We usually just flop through dinner, which reminds me of the term grace, when somebody graces your life. Remember Poem in October by Dylan Thomas and the parables? Something about when I walk through the parables of my childhood and my heart song, and you know it's also true, but the years get turned around or something. It was this, you can say it was that, or it was laryngitis, but poems, you just don't run around with poems. Poetry is something else, little pieces jogging around. So you see, I just had this nutty thing, and you know how poems just come up, make nothing happen, and thank you for listening.